Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Oh, yes, the train kept rolling
all night long.
Yeah, the train kept rolling.
This is The Takeaway with MHP from WNYC and PRX in collaboration with GBH News in Boston.
All aboard the takeaway train. It's time for the final installment of our mini-series on how trains built America. Now, in the first episode, we heard stories of train laborers, from those who laid the tracks to those who keep the trains running today. And in our second episode, we heard about how trains were and are prominent sites in America's long struggle for racial justice. Now, if you haven't heard those, head on over to our podcast feed after the show today and get up to speed. Throughout the week, we've also been hearing from you about how trains have affected your lives.
This is Nora from Denver, Colorado. My parents used to put us on the train from Denver to Chicago every summer. The California Zephyr, fabulous experience.
And today, we've got just a few more stops to explore before we pull this takeaway train into the station. It's time to hear about just a few of the many ways that trains have affected pretty much every aspect of modern life. Our food, our music, our religious practices, even our sense of time and space.
The railroads invented time zones.
That's right, time zones. Before we had four standardized time zones, people just ran on God's time or the sun's time. But for a transcontinental industry hauling tons of humans and freight on crisscrossing tracks, not knowing exactly when a train would be where, well, that could be disastrous. So in 1883, major railroads got together and decided they were going to get their time straight. And it happened all at once, on the day of two noons. Here's H. Roger Grant, the Catherine and Calhoun Lemon Professor of History at Clemson University.
And so the big day occurred on Sunday, November the 18th, 1883, and approximately 600 railroad companies abandoned the 53 arbitrary times, and this resulted in the formation of four time zones. Probably virtually every clock had to be adjusted, maybe not by more than 3 or 4 or 5 minutes, but I have no idea how many clocks. But if you have, let's say, between 75 and 80,000 railroad stations, you're talking lots of clocks. So that's the day of two noons.
And once the railroads had a grip on time, they could really start building many of the industries that you and I still interact with today. In fact, almost every day. Here's John Hankey, former curator of the Baltimore, Ohio Railroad Museum.
Alva Sears, a railroad station telegrapher, got a shipment of watches that didn't get claimed. He sold them to other railroaders up and down the line. That was the basic origin of Sears and Roebuck as a Chicago department store. Imagine anywhere in the country being able to order from Sears in Chicago by telegraph and have the stuff picked, packed, and shipped by rail in sometimes less than a day. It was the Amazon.com of the 19th century.
And it wasn't just our interior decorating taste that railroads helped cultivate. It was our literal taste, too. Here's Rudy Garbally, director of the Dining Car Society and president of Garbally Publishing Company.
If you could step on a train in New York City and that railroad was serving the dishes that New York City had popularized, like, say, a Waldorf salad, and you could step off a train in Chicago and still get that same dish on the same train in Chicago, well, suddenly restaurants in Chicago are serving Waldorf salads. The Union Pacific's dining cars actually had recipes for lo mein that even in Chicago probably would not have been a well-known or well-accepted dish at the time, 1930s, 1940s, but was extremely popular in California. Some of that kind of cuisine made its way east because you could order it leaving California, but you could also order it as you're going through Nebraska on your way to Chicago on the same train. That's one of the reasons that Chinese cuisine kind of made its way across the country.
Have you ever wondered why most bread loaves you buy in the supermarket are square-shaped? Well, that's trains. The Pullman Company developed square loaves as a way to easily bake, stack, and store mass quantities of bread in the confined spaces on train cars. And while these Pullman loaves weren't the best thing since sliced bread, they were the direct predecessor. Now, it's easy to see how a national shipping network could change the goods and services Americans could access. But railroads not only helped feed American bellies, they helped feed our souls. Here's Bob Lettenberger, associate editor of Trains magazine, who we met back in episode one.
Some of the larger organized faiths in our country, the Catholics, the Baptists, the Episcopalians, seized on the idea, let's take a railroad car and turn it into a church. And we can bring this to a town that is just setting down roots. We can park it on a siding for a few months until we can build a proper church, put a minister or a priest on the car, and this is their church. There were a number of chapel cars that roamed mainly through the western part of the U.S., and in a lot of these up-and-coming emerging towns, that was the first church. And if you can imagine the Victorian times, some of these, Melissa, were fabulous. I mean, stained glass, ornate woodwork. There is at least one that I know of that still exists that has its original pump organ in it. Yeah, it had a pump organ.
And as trains chugged across the country, the very rhythm of their movements inspired creatives, from directors to musicians to painters to poets. Here's Professor Roger Grant again.
The first real movie was The Great Train Robbery in 1903. We have these classic movies like The Great Locomotive Chase comes to mind, the famous Disney film in the mid-1950s, or North by Northwest, the famous Cary Grant, Eva Marie Saint film from 1959.
And here's Professor Mariam Thagart of the University of Buffalo from episode two.
I think the train appears, it resonates with so many different aspects of not just American culture, but African-American culture specifically. And the train, of course, is really important for African-American poetry. Just think about the poetry of, say, Langston Hughes or Sterling Brown. You know, the rhythm, the sense of the chug-a-lug of that railroad sound. We can sort of hear it in the poems of Sterling Brown and Langston Hughes.
I am fed up with Jim Crow laws, people who are cruel and afraid, who lynch and run, who are scared of me and me of them. So I pick up my life and take it away on a one-way ticket. Gone up north, gone out west, gone.
And Professor Manu Karaka of Barnard College, who we met in the first episode.
If we think of the blues, the rhythms of different blues that could be actually directly associated with the rhythms of different train lines, the sounds of the whistles, which were modified or transposed into the form of melodies.
And why do we still love trains so much? We're hearing from you next. Don't disembark the takeaway train yet.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back aboard the Takeaway Train. I'm your engineer, Melissa Harris-Perry. So, why do we love trains so much? What is it about them that's captivated the American imagination for centuries? Here's Jared Johnson, Executive Director of Transit Matters.
I think the places that we love, by and large, were facilitated by trains. You know, we often think of America as a highway country where the car represents freedom. But I think folks don't realize that at one point, America had a rail network that was the envy of the world. You could reach any town of any significance on a train or on an interurban trolley. You know, some of the neighborhoods that are springing back to life, some of the small towns with these you know, beautiful, quaint main streets. You know, these were only enabled because of the train.
Professor Jeff Shirky at SUNY Empire State offered his take.
You can have a sort of sense of community and adventure on a train with lots of people together on a long journey. There's also the sense of how time and space are condensed by the trains. It connects us all in a kind of unique way that, again, I think is different from air travel, because you just on a plane, you just kind of fly over everything. But on the train, you can actually, you're there and then you make stops along the way.
But for many, there's something about trains that's deeply connected to our sense of self, both as a country and as individuals. And for some of you, they're part of your family history.
Richard from Shenandoah County, Virginia. My dad was on the railroad. The skills that he learned in World War II, Navy, helped him land a really a nice job on the most major railroad on the East Coast, New York, Miami, and back. I was thoroughly enthralled with the railroad since I was born. My children, my spouse, everybody's got involved along the way. I've even ridden on historic trains and met people on the trains, had a date on the trains. It just goes on and on.
Hi, this is Hannah Clark from Denver, Colorado. My father was a lifelong train enthusiast. Growing up in a small town, I think they were something exciting whenever they rolled through and sort of connected him to the outside world and what was next. In 2019, he died of lymphoma, and something surprising he loved watching in the hospital was live feeds of train crossings, and he found it so calming, and we would always come in and ask, any good trains today? And he'd talk about the ones that he'd seen rolling by. I like to think that it reminded him of that connection to something bigger and what's next.
For others, trains are very much part of your daily life.
My name is Ann Zeta, and I'm calling from Fort Worth, Texas. I work with trains, I ride trains, and I love trains. In Fort Worth, we have Texrail, which we got our train to the airport during the time that I served on the Fort Worth City Council. So I was instrumental in helping bring that to fruition. And even when I get stopped by freight trains crossing roadways when I'm driving, I stop and watch them, and they do not annoy me because I just love trains so much.
Hi, my name is Ryan from Denver. I drive a commuter train. A little weird being sort of at the forefront of a lot of issues you see in the media with increasing prices, homelessness, crime. But it's a lot of fun. It's really nice to see people use the service we provide.
And those trains bring excitement and adventure.
Hey, this is Paul from Playa del Rey, California. Last year, I took my kids on the trains from L.A. to San Francisco to Moab, stopping at Green River, to Denver, Chicago, Santa Fe, and then back to L.A. Union Station. It was an amazing 12-day trip with several overnights on the trains, and we just love it.
And plenty of y'all just love trains because, well, they're pretty cool.
Hi, my name is Miles, and I am into trains. I love to record trains, ride trains, watch trains. I have a YouTube channel myself. I love trains. Trains is like my biggest hobby.
Thanks to all of you who shared your train stories and your train love with us. And thanks for coming on this special journey over the past week.